Good morning. It's April 9th, and this is your daily brief in EU news. Here's everything you need to know. The tension between Russia and Ukraine has taken a dangerous turn with drone attacks on the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, spotlighting the high stakes of this conflict. Each side points fingers at the other, creating a complex web of accusations and geopolitical maneuvering. The International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, has confirmed these drone strikes, which have unfortunately resulted in one casualty, while the plant's reactors have been in a state of shutdown for months. This situation not only raises alarms about immediate safety concerns, but also about the long-term implications for nuclear security in the region. The Institute for the Study of War in Washington has shed light on Russia's intentions, suggesting that by maintaining physical control over the plant, Russia aims to cement its claim over sovereign Ukrainian territory. This strategic move underscores the broader implications of the conflict, extending beyond immediate territorial disputes to questions of international law and sovereignty. Meanwhile, the human cost of this conflict continues to climb, with recent Russian bombings in the Zaporizhia region claiming 3 lives. These casualties are a grim reminder of the conflict's toll on civilians. In response to the escalating threat, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has made an urgent plea for additional Patriot air defense missiles from the United States to fend off increasing Russian air attacks. However, this vital assistance is caught in the bureaucratic limbo of Congress, highlighting a critical gap in the international response to the crisis. President Zelensky has also voiced concerns over intensified attacks on the city of Kharkiv, calling for bolstered support from Ukraine's allies to navigate these turbulent times. This plea underscores the urgent need for a coordinated international effort to address the multifaceted challenges posed by the ongoing conflict, ensuring the safety and stability of the region. In a devastating turn of events, southern Russia and Kazakhstan have been hit by severe flooding, leading to mass evacuations, infrastructure damage, and sparking rare protests. The calamity, fueled by heavy rain, rapid snowmelt, and the broader context of climate change, has put tens of thousands in jeopardy and prompted a swift governmental response. The city of Orsk in Kazakhstan saw the rupture of protective dikes, necessitating the evacuation of 76,000 people. Meanwhile, in Russia's Orenburg region, over 4,000 individuals were forced to evacuate, with approximately 10,000 homes suffering from flood damage. The Russian government has declared a federal emergency, pledging compensation payments of 10,000 rubles a month for 6 months to those affected by the floods, which have caused an estimated total damage of 21 billion rubles. Authorities have launched a criminal investigation into construction violations that may have led to the dam's failure in Russia. The situation is dire in Kazakhstan as well, where the president has described the flooding as the worst natural disaster in 80 years. The floods have been linked to 4 fatalities, though these deaths were reported as unrelated to the flooding. Additionally, an overpass collapse in the Smolensk region has claimed 1 life and injured several others. In response to the crisis, President Putin has ordered the formation of a special commission, and a state of emergency has been declared in multiple regions. The defense ministry and soldiers are aiding relief efforts, setting up emergency shelters for those displaced. Amidst this chaos, residents in Orsk, Russia, have taken to the streets in a rare demonstration, demanding compensation and accountability for the dam collapse and subsequent flooding. The regional government's promise of financial assistance underscores the severity of the situation and the urgent need for support and reconstruction in the affected areas. In a year marked by rising crime rates, Germany and Washington, D.C. find themselves grappling with significant increases in criminal activity, igniting debates on policy and security. Germany's crime statistics for 2023 have taken a notable turn, with reported crimes climbing by 5.5% to nearly 6 million, marking the highest level since 2016. The clear-up rate has also seen an uptick, reaching 58.4%. Particularly in Thuringia, the situation has reached a 10-year peak, with reported crimes surging by 10% from the previous year to around 150,500 cases. This rise in crime has brought the issue of migration under the spotlight. Out of 2.25 million suspects in Germany, 923,269 were non-German citizens. This statistic has fueled a debate on the link between migration and crime rates. Interior Minister Joachim Herrmann is calling for a fundamental change in asylum policy. He suggests that Germany needs faster asylum procedures and a better integration of security and migration policies, including increased efforts to combat human trafficking and the quicker deportation of repeat offenders. On the other side of the debate, Green Party politician Lamia Kaddour emphasises the importance of addressing the root causes of crime, cautioning against divisive rhetoric regarding immigration. Meanwhile, across the Atlantic, Washington, D.C. is facing its own crime wave, with homicides up by nearly 35%, robberies by 67%, and violent crime overall surging by almost 40% in 2023. Amidst this, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has received a security detail, even as leaders attempt to downplay the city's crime problems. This situation has prompted Fox News to seek comments from the Department of Transportation, highlighting the widespread concern over the rising crime rates and the responses to them. In a strategic pivot, Apple has put forth a proposal to the European Union, aiming to navigate through the choppy waters of regulatory fines for its alleged anti-competitive practices, particularly against music streaming services. This move underscores the tech giant's effort to align more closely with EU regulations, while still protecting its business interests. Previously, Apple faced criticism and fines from the EU for favouring its own music streaming service over competitors, a practice deemed unfair under EU antitrust laws. In response, Apple's proposal introduces a significant change, allowing streaming services to direct users to alternative payment options outside of the App Store. However, Apple plans to impose a 27% fee on purchases made through these external links, a move likely to spark discussions on fairness and competition. In addition to addressing concerns around music streaming, Apple has also updated its App Store review guidelines to permit retro game emulator apps. This decision, possibly influenced by pressure from regulatory bodies like the US Department of Justice and the European Commission, marks a notable shift in Apple's stance on emulators. While emulators themselves are legal, the use of such apps to play pirated games is not. Thus, any emulator apps making their way to iOS, such as RetroArch and Dolphin, are expected to steer clear of advising users on acquiring ROMs from illicit sources, emphasizing the need for users to source their ROM files legally. As the EU regulators pore over Apple's proposal, the tech giant finds itself at a critical juncture. The outcome of this review could either pave the way for a more compliant and competitive marketplace or lead to further antitrust charges and fines for Apple, should the proposal fail to meet the EU's expectations. The tech community and regulators alike are keenly watching this development, recognizing its potential to set precedents for how tech giants navigate regulatory compliance and competition in the digital age. In a landmark moment for climate justice, The European Court of Human Rights is on the brink of delivering rulings that could redefine the landscape of environmental litigation in Europe. This Tuesday, the court will announce its decisions on three pivotal climate-related cases originating from France, Switzerland, and Portugal, each bearing the weight of potential historic legal precedents. At the heart of the Swiss case is a group of elderly women, represented by Verin Klimasignorinnen-Schweiz and backed by Greenpeace, who have taken a bold stand against their government. They argue that their health issues and limitations, exacerbated by heat waves, are a direct violation of the European Convention on Human Rights by the Swiss government. This case is not just about Switzerland, it's a beacon for climate litigation, indicating a growing trend of environmental cases making their way to the highest courts. The significance of these rulings extends beyond national borders, particularly influencing a major case brought by six young Portuguese activists. These individuals are challenging 33 countries over their inaction on climate change, a case ignited by the devastating 2017 wildfires in Portugal. This case, now under the Grand Chamber's review, underscores the increasing role of legal systems in addressing global climate inaction. The outcomes of these cases are poised to do more than just set legal precedents. They could compel European governments to overhaul their climate policies and even establish new fundamental rights related to climate stability. Such a shift would not only mark a significant advancement in environmental protection, but also redefine the legal framework for future climate action across Europe. This has been your daily brief in EU News. To read more about these stories, follow the links in the episode bio. You can also subscribe to these updates via email at www.brief.news. For more daily podcasts about the topics you love, visit brief.news/podcasts. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be back with everything you need to know.